Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries, daily, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the free enterprise system when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history, and surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. Now, that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from about 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, banking, insurance, business, and industry is obtaining all of this information about you? And what are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? And what do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. While you're at it, ask for our free general law CD package, and I'll tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, best of all, it's free. And you can call and ask for one right now. The number again is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about the free enterprise system. The free enterprise system is an article that was published by Foundations of Liberty. I'm going to give you their name and number. And you can get a free copy if you want by asking for it. It's called the MacArthur Institute. Just write to the MacArthur Institute, 946th Avenue in East Moline, Illinois. And the zip code is 61244. And then if you want to go zip plus 4, just add hyphen 4406. That's 61244-4406. James R. Patrick is the editor. They got a phone up there, too. The number's 309-796-1485. Once more, that's area code 309-796-1485. We are reviewing their publication called The Free Enterprise, that mysterious, magical, misunderstood system that works better than all the rest of the systems in the world, called Free Enterprise. Last time we were talking about free enterprise and the free marketplace. The free marketplace. Next item I want to cover here is called limited government. Now, we've probably heard that term, limited government. Here in America, we don't have that anymore. We have an all-powerful, expansive government now, just filled with all kinds of regulations and controls. And as a result of that, we have higher prices, and our free enterprise system isn't working very well. The free enterprise system isn't working very well, as evidenced by our recession, as evidenced by our depression. And it's going to work even worse and worse, or poorer and poorer, however you want to word it, as time progresses, because there are certain basic laws, rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices that have to be followed. And we're not doing that anymore. We've made some changes now. And we've come to the conclusion that government should interfere in the marketplace and should regulate and protect our jobs and give us unemployment insurance and workman's compensation and all the goodies and benefits, and that they should regulate business. And there is an economic outcome that comes from that. Now, while our system is working poorer and poorer as compared to, 100 years ago, it's still working better and better than the competing systems that, let's say, in North Korea and certain parts of Africa. And we've adopted a system here which we call communism here in the West. We have now adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a political system, and that political system impacts upon our economic system. Now, we can still practice free enterprise here in the United States, and it's a better system, in my view. It comes from the Ten Commandment model. It's enshrined in our Constitution, and it is being espoused by the MacArthur Institute. They think it's a good system, and they would like to educate you and tell you more about it. I took a look at their publication and said, yeah, it sounds like a pretty good article to me. I think I'll review it. So let's take a look at limited government. What is the limit? Well, the role of government is easy to misunderstand, and especially given the restricted historical and operational information that we generally have available from our public school system. The federal government's role is found partly in the preamble to our Constitution as part of the purpose and goals, and more explicitly in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, which is to provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. Now, these words were carefully chosen and intended to mesh into the meaning of the first 10 amendments called the Bill of Rights. There are 18 specific functions provided to the federal government. Anything not authorized by the Constitution is prohibited. Otherwise, any government function or use anyone could dream up could be put into operation regardless of its cost, value, or detrimental effect on the citizens. Beyond these provisions, we have less, or that's called a limited government. So why limited government? Why do we want limited government? And that's because excessive taxes tax incentive also. If you tax excessively, it taxes your incentive. So going back to our chair example, what if the chair tax grew from one chair out of 20 to, let's say, 3 chairs out of 20, or 6 chairs out of 20, or 9 chairs out of 20, or even 12 chairs out of every 20 that I manufacture? How much incentive would I have? How much incentive would there be for the entrepreneur and business owner to continue to produce more good chairs with increased value to serve customers? We might even defend all the good things being done by the chair tax about how it educates children in public school, in that we had even more protection in public services than ever. We can even say that we're providing those who can't afford chairs with a higher standard of living. But the effect is still the same. When limited government becomes all-pervasive, then that government demotivates everybody that's involved. those taken from the producers as well as those provided for the recipients, diminishing everyone's standard of living and quality of life. The more government interference you have in the market system, then the less production you have, the higher the prices, and the poorer the quality. It's the way it works, like it or lump it. And you can sit there and say, well, we need these taxes and we need these protections. We need OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission and all these government agencies and bureaucracies. But let me point something out. What is it that all of these government employees are doing to produce chairs? How do they increase or provide better chairs at lower cost? Now, mull it over. What does the State Tax Commission do to increase the quality of the chair? Distribution of the chairs? Well, the answer is they produce absolutely nothing, and they are an impediment to the quality and the production of the chairs. They're actually an impediment. Government gets in the way. Government adds to the cost. Now, somebody's going to say, but it's necessary. Well, okay. We agreed that one chair out of 20 was necessary to protect us from the mafia. And so from our perspective, it doesn't make any difference whether you're paying the thief, the extortionist, or you're paying the policeman. It's still costing you one chair. But our question here is, what if the tax on the chair goes to 3, 6, 9, or 12 chairs out of 20? What if we were to carry it to its extreme? We will let you keep one chair, and we're going to take 19. How many chairs would you produce? Now, at some point in time, you reach an equilibrium. You reach a point where you come back with diminishing returns. An example of that is where you're taxing cigarettes. So people want to smoke, and they're addicted to it, and so they buy cigarettes. And so when cigarettes are 30 cents a pack, people are buying X number of packs of cigarettes. So let's tax those cigarettes 5 cents a pack. All right, how does that influence the consumption of cigarettes? Probably not at all. How about 10 cents a pack, 20 cents a pack, 50 cents a pack, a dollar a pack? You see, now cigarettes are costing around $5 a pack. What they've discovered in New Jersey, for instance, is that when they raise the cigarette tax, the amount of money that they expected to raise from the tax, that is the new revenue, actually declined. And that's because either more people stopped smoking or they started smoking somebody else's cigarettes that were smuggled in from North Carolina. So they raised the tax and they got less revenue from it. Now, that's what we call equilibrium. At some point in time, you will come to a point where you will actually reach diminishing returns. Now your common sense says, well, then we better back off. Well, governments don't do that. Governments, at least as far as I can tell in history, have never backed off. And so they ultimately carry it to such an extreme that it promotes or provokes a revolution, or the system just breaks down. It doesn't work anymore like it does in Italy. So they've got two economies working in Italy. They've got the what they call the state economy, and then they got the underground economy. Here in the United States, we have an underground, or more properly, instead of calling it the underground economy, it's really the free marketplace. The free marketplace. And I've pointed out in the past, the marijuana business in the United States is the biggest agricultural enterprise in the country, and it doesn't have any price supports. It doesn't have any government. Well, it has government interference trying to put them out of business, but the government isn't in there offering any price supports or any government services or soil banks or soil amenities or anything like that. The government's in the way, but the producers, the free enterprise producers of marijuana do a better job than the government-controlled producers of wheat, corn, soybeans, and cotton. As is proven by the fact that it's a bigger crop. So free enterprise works, and it works so well that it works in spite of government. In spite of what the government does to thwart business and free enterprise. Free enterprise will work anyway. It just goes underground. We call it the underground economy. And that's what you have with cigarettes. When you raise the price or the tax of cigarettes to such a level that it won't clear the market any longer, the free marketplace comes in. And the free marketplace is producing cigarettes in New Jersey for less than you can buy them for at Walmart. And then that's the results that come from big government, all-expansive government, coming in and taxing for the benefit of the public, which in reality is the benefit of the minority called the government bureaucracy. Now, in a brief advertisement entitled Socialism 101, the Warner Swayze Company described how such a system works. A group of students took a test where half received grades of 55% and the other half 95%. The teacher thought these results unfair and corrected the system simply by dividing the total points and redistributing them. The teacher took 20 points from the good students and gave 20 points to the failing students, so that each student then received 75% on the test. That made it equal and fair. So the good students were asked if they would study as hard for the next test, and their answer was no. Why? Well, because they had taken from them points that they'd worked very hard to earn. And the failing students were similarly asked, and they also said no, they would not work harder for the next test. Why? Well, because they received points without having to work for them. So in an academic sense, the entire level of effort, the pool of knowledge or production, was lowered in the process. And that's the effect that confusing equality of opportunity with equality or results can have. Now, the teacher may have meant well. The teacher may say, well, I don't want the failing students to be inhibited and to feel poorly about themselves. And taking 20 points off of the students that have worked harder and produced greater results won't hurt them because they're not going to fail. Everybody's going to pass now. That's what we've done to education, and that's why we have mediocrity in education rather than excellence. Now, the same thing happens here in the marketplace. What General Motors and Chrysler are suffering from is mediocrity. And how do we know that? Well, most of you people out there prefer to buy those Japanese cars. And why is that? I mean, if the Japanese were producing cars like General Motors and Chrysler, they would be going out of business. And that's just the way life is. So customers buy what it is that they want to buy for the prices that they want to pay. If government has interfered in the car marketplace and given an uneven playing field for Chrysler and General Motors, well, then my point is proven again. When government interferes in the marketplace, they destroy it. They don't enhance it. They're not doing anything for Chrysler or General Motors by interfering in the marketplace. By the same token, they are enriching the Toyotas and Datsuns, and they're distorting the marketplace, and they're creating a marketplace that isn't true, isn't fair, and isn't a level playing field. So, you know, whichever it is, doesn't make any difference. But the bottom line is, the poorer will not work harder to increase their productivity or their quality. And those that are producing the highest are going to work less hard to maintain those higher standards of quality. So you're going to have General Motors and Chrysler ultimately go out of business, and then Datsun and Toyota will produce poorer and poorer products because there's no competition. Now, government's function is to serve as the guardian for a climate of free enterprise to ensure national security and defense and public policy, coin money, and regulate the value thereof, ensure uniformity of weights and measures, provide a legal system to make and enforce laws and contracts necessary for enterprise to work, to assure equal rights, opportunity, and justice for every citizen. It's not there to meddle or interfere in the marketplace. It's not there to fire the General Motors chairman. Let the General Motors stockholders figure that out. A condition to the Founding Fathers signing the Declaration of Independence was that the Constitution have incorporated within it a Bill of Rights which guaranteed every individual sovereignty with respect to the central government. Now, the Constitution was complete when the Bill of Rights was added to it on December 15, 1791, over 4 years after the Constitution was signed on September 17, 1787. We were without a constitution for more than 11 years and guaranteed no individual rights for another 4 years. So for almost two centuries, these three documents have defined what has made America different. The Bill of Rights is what really guarantees individual liberties, protecting people from government oppression, and helping make the American free enterprise system work. Without these freedoms and continuing guarantees of freedom, the power of freedom on the human spirit could not be unleashed. So the Bill of Rights then guarantees us that free marketplace, that place where we can work and produce, and then when we work and produce, we get to keep what we create. Now government comes in, and at present here in the United States, they're taxing us pretty heavy. Quick illustration, I used to run a company that had 30 employees. And we produced about $100,000 a month, a little over $1 million a year, with 30 employees. Payroll was about $10,000 a week, $500,000 a year, about half, you know, right at half of what we produced went to labor for those employees. And the company earned a profit of about 10%, about $100,000 a year. And we pay taxes of about 20% or about $200,000 a year. How do you like that? So here we are, we're producing $1 million and $500,000 goes to labor, $200,000 goes to taxes, $100,000 goes to profit. And then there's about $300,000 that goes for raw materials. That would equal about $1,200,000 or maybe a little more. That was the division. Now, I took a look at this, and one day, I became disenchanted, dissatisfied, and I closed the company. I said, I'm not going to work for this. I am not going to work and produce in a company where the government makes twice as much money as I do. And one of the reasons that I came to that conclusion was that government was doing absolutely nothing to produce, and they were doing a lot to prohibit me or to impair me from producing. So the government was taking about 10 of my chairs, see? And so because of that, I said, well, if the government's going to take 10 chairs and leave me with 10, and then I have to run the company, and I have to do all this production over here. In fact, the government was taking 15 chairs and leaving me with 5 is what it really boiled down to, because they were taking twice as much as I was receiving. So I just closed it down, and I went into something else. Now, the net result of that is you don't have those products in the marketplace any longer, and those 30 employees don't have employment. And the one guy that was the entrepreneur is no longer entrepreneuring for the benefit of government or those 30 employees. I went into the underground economy. I just dropped off the map and said, to hell with it. I'm not going to do that anymore. So it's not good for anybody. Big government and this all-pervasive fascist model, this communist model that we've adopted over here, doesn't work. Well, it does. It does work. I guess I shouldn't say it doesn't work, but it doesn't work nearly as well. And it stifles our incentive. It doesn't prevent us from going to school. It just prevents those poorer students from working harder to achieve more. And the brighter students, they don't want to work and achieve because they don't get all the benefits from it. So using this education example, you know, just kind of lays it out in spades. Now, all of this then influences our standard of living. As we continue to produce and specialize and choose what we want to do, how and how well we do it, we find our whole life becomes more abundant. And as we save and invest, forego present consumption for future security, our capital base of tools, equipment, machinery, and technology continues to grow. That gives us more goods and services for less expenditure and materials. less money, time, and labor. Economists call this the highest and best use of our resources. Now, our freedom to enter new enterprise and markets triggers that unique risk-taking, challenge-setting, opportunity-seeking characteristic of the human spirit, which is called entrepreneurship. We seek to go beyond what we have done and what others have done. We pit ourselves and our faith, ideas, and personal resources against the unknown, and we pursue a dream. In the process, we enrich, and we are enriched, with a higher standard of living, more material goods, and more conveniences. A higher quality of life can flow from the increased standard of living. Quality of life means we advance as human beings, aspire to become more and better, to know ourselves, our Creator, and sources of our strengths, to contemplate our reason for living, the purpose for being. What we do with our abundance depends upon us. It's our compassion, care, and concern for our fellow man, and for our precepts of the meaning of life. A higher standard of living can be either a blessing or a curse, depending upon the personal interpretation, philosophy, and higher aspirations. Higher quality of life comes more from within ourselves, freed and accelerated by the higher standard of living afforded by the most efficient and the least judgmental economic system, which depends upon character, personal integrity, and freedom with responsibility. Freedom and free enterprise work, and they work very well together. So back to basics, free enterprise. Two definitions. We have discussed various aspects and characteristics of free enterprise. We bring it all together by formal definition. So back to Webster's New World Dictionary. Free enterprise is the economic doctrine or practice of permitting private industry to operate under freely competitive conditions with a minimum of government control. The key words here are permitting and minimum of government control. Governments can and do control, and if they over-control, they do harm. Here's a more functional definition from Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary and outline for a 20-minute speech on free enterprise. They say, free enterprise, it's the freedom of private business to organize and operate for a profit in a competitive system without interference. Well, without interference by government beyond regulation necessary to protect public interest and keep the national economy in balance. Uh-oh. Well, that's what FDR did back in the 1930s, and that's where we are today. So whether we call it free enterprise, the free market system, the private enterprise system, the individual incentive system, or the competitive enterprise system, it works, and it works better than any other system so far devised by man. It's based upon freedom with responsibility and recognizes the strengths and weaknesses and the limitations of its fallible inventors and moral participants. Now, America is a great experiment in freedom, but it's only an experiment, and experiments can fail. And the more we know, understand, defend, and support responsible freedom and the system that it works best in, the more then we can expect from the blessings of freedom and the gift of being alive here, now as part of this noble experiment. So the free enterprise experiment is still ongoing. It's under attack, has been for many years. But understand this, the free enterprise system works in Russia, China, Rhodesia, Brazil, and America right now side by side with the oppressive government system. Sure it does. Let me refer you back to the marijuana growers of America, producing $37 billion worth of product for their customers every year. They have a bigger business than wheat, corn, soybeans, or cotton. They produce it with great government interference. And they produce it at a profit. And they produce it at a price that the customers want to pay. It's the free market system at its best. And government can come in, and it doesn't make any difference how much they try to eradicate marijuana. It's part and parcel with the free enterprise system. Now, what would happen if government got a hands-off attitude towards marijuana, the price would collapse overnight. If marijuana were legalized, it would sell for less than cigarettes. That's how abundant it is. Now, the tobacco industry does not want legalization of marijuana because it would be a competitive product to tobacco, because the price would fall. That's all. That's the bottom line. It's a better product for less money. So by impeding the production of marijuana, it forces the price higher. And the marijuana growers all benefit from it. And because of that higher price, the higher profit, it's more lucrative. It's worth the risk. Remember, free enterprise involves risk. And so those entrepreneurs that are in the marijuana business are willing to take that risk for the higher profits than they would make growing tobacco. Now, tobacco is a very regulated and controlled enterprise. Marijuana is unregulated and uncontrolled. Now, just take a look at the two systems. And the marijuana growers make more money, take more risk, but they make more money, have a higher reward for their enterprise than the tobacco growers. That's what the bottom line to free enterprise is all about. Risk, reward. Now, all economic gain must be eventually shared, and that's a basic principle of such broad application that it might be called a general law of economics. And it works this way. All business is done by agreements of some kind. The agreements are voluntary, and nobody agrees to anything unless he finds it in some way to his advantage. These add up then all together to make the essential reasons why economic well-being is more widely distributed here in the United States than it ever has been in any other country in the world. Because in a free economy, everybody gets a share of the values that other people have to offer. But they also have to share a part of the values that they themselves have to offer with others. A million deals, agreements, trades, contracts, and bargains are made every day in this country. And all of them are voluntary. And they go on the same principle as that of the most primitive barter between Indians and fur traders. Both sides gain, or at least they believe that they're gaining. But because of this principle of sharing, or letting the other fellow make a profit also, the free economy is one of history's greatest mechanism for the diffusion of wealth. When you want to divide up the pie, the free enterprise system does a better, more equitable process or job than does government. Hey, we're at the halfway point here, so let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the Free Enterprise System, a publication put out by the Foundations of Liberty, entitled The Free Enterprise System. Now, Foundations of Liberty is a school in Moline, East Moline, Illinois. They actually operate a private school up there. You could talk to the editor, James R. Patrick, by calling 309. Here's their phone number. It's 309, area code 796-1485, if you're up in the Chicago region or environment or area. Again, that's area code 309-796-1485. They operate a school, I think, from grade 1 through 12. It's called the MacArthur Institute. They're located at 946th Avenue, East Moline, Illinois. And their zip code is 61244. And if you want to put their P.O. box on there, it's -4406. So that's 61244, zip code, -4406. This is an article in their publication called The Free Enterprise System, explaining the system here that we Americans should be learning about in our public schools. We don't. We learn about communism here in the United States. It has now replaced our capitalist free enterprise system. We now practice communism and fascism here in this country. Now, that does not mean that we don't have a vibrant underground economy. I mean, we have a vibrant free market economy here in the United States. And it's called the black market. Black market. And one of the biggest products that's being sold in the black market is called marijuana. Now, not everything that is in the black market is illegal per se. That is, you know, like marijuana or cocaine or some illegal drug. Keeping in mind that here in America, marijuana is not illegal. I think there's a misunderstanding here. Marijuana is sold in your local Rexall store under a different brand name. I have a student who is a pharmacist, and I was amazed. He came in here to class one day, and he says, "Oh, you misunderstand. You don't understand marijuana." And I said, "Explain that to me." He said, "Well, marijuana is sold under," and I forget what the trade name is, "but you go to your local doctor, and you say, 'Hey, I'd like to have this product.'" And your local doctor, it has to be prescribed, and he'll prescribe it, and you go down to your local Rexall or Osco Betry and have the prescription filled, and there you have marijuana right there. You just take it in the form of a pill. Now, it costs six times more than it does down on the street, and this is why the free enterprise system works so well in America. There are producers in America who will produce marijuana for you for 1/6 the price that the government pharmaceutical monopoly, the fascist monopoly, produce it and sell it for. And so government comes in to protect their tax base, and they say, "Hey, we're going to declare marijuana growing and marijuana use to be illegal." And so they do the same thing, but they have a different trade name for it. So stop using that word marijuana and start using the trade name. You'd be better off. Now, they also do the same thing with cocaine. Now, see, you think that cocaine is a bad drug and it's illegal and unlawful. Not so. No, it's sold under a different trade name. And your local doctor can prescribe it for you. and send you down to the local Rexall store, and you can buy cocaine, heroin, you know, you name it, and you can get it. And you can get it legally with a doctor's prescription. Now, the hang-up there is that it costs six times more. The pharmaceutical industry pays taxes to government. So you can see the government-pharmaceutical industry incestuous relationship. By regulating and controlling these drugs, they force them off the streets or off out of the marketplace. Now, of course, now here comes the free marketplace. Here comes risk. See, it takes a lot of time, effort, and energy, and money, and lives spent. And, I mean, the government is working their hearts out to eradicate these drugs from off the streets. They're not out to eradicate them from the pharmaceutical industry. Government does not want to restrict your access to cocaine, heroin, or marijuana. They want to restrict your access to cheap heroin, cocaine, or marijuana. So they interfere with the marketplace. But now the marketplace comes back, you know, in what we call the underground economy. And as a result of that, now that's the best example that I can think of as to how the free economy works. Now there's another example. Let's take tobacco. Tobacco is a weed. Tobacco, you know, grows like dandelions in the cracks of your sidewalks, for crying out loud. A crummy weed. Now, because of a certain drug that's in this tobacco called nicotine, which is what you smoke for. You don't smoke because it's smoke in your eyes, you know. You smoke for the drug that's in this product. And so, over the years, tobacco has become very popular, and people become addicted to it. All right, so government got into it and said, well, let's tax it. It's popular, so let's tax it. And so they did. They taxed it. And so now here in the United States, cigarettes are about $5 a pack. Now, I quit smoking years ago when they were 30 cents. Shows you how long ago I was smoking, 30 cents a pack. And over the years, government has raised the price of the tax on cigarettes until now the price is $5 a pack. Now, when governments raise the tax on the tobacco, they find they sell less tobacco, and that's because there's more and more people in the free enterprise system producing tobacco and smuggling tobacco and smuggling into those high tax states so that people can buy it at a competitive price or a lower price. So tobacco products on the street in New Jersey sell for less than they do in the Walmart store. So if government, you know, really wants to stimulate the free enterprise system, if government would raise the price of cigarette tax, say, to $10 a pack, hell, let's raise it to $20 a pack. Boys and girls, when you have to pay $20 a pack for cigarette tax, you can rest assured that you will create a new underground economy for tobacco products that will rival marijuana and drug wars that you see going on today. I mean, government has done that with marijuana. You know, up until 1937, marijuana was legal in the United States. You didn't have any drug wars going on. You didn't have people getting killed on the border and drug cartels working. You've created that. The government has created this scarcity in supply, which has raised the price. That's what we're talking about here with capitalism. Capitalism, the free marketplace. Now listen to this. Everybody for himself said the elephant as he danced around among the chickens. This lampoon of capitalism came from a Canadian politician. The word capitalism has fallen into disrepute. It is associated with other pejorative terms such as fat cat, big business, military-industrial complex, greedy industrialists, stand patters, reactionaries, and property values without regard to human values. And many serious scholars look on capitalism as a transcendental system between late feudalism and inevitable socialism. Well, Adam Smith has been associated with the word capitalism, even though he did not use that term. He did not so much as refer to capital by that name, but he used the word stock to describe what we call capital. Karl Marx wrote in response to Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations and called his great work Das Kapital. There was much disparagement and scorn, even hate, for the ideas of the free market economy. The term capitalism has been less than appealing to many people since that time, even though they know little about the contents of the Marx benchmark in political economy. Now, some political economists who cherish individual liberty and the free market have suggested that a new name be found to describe economic liberty and individual responsibility. Until a new name appears, however, the thoughtful person does well to think twice before he disparages the market economy with all of its implications implied by the term capitalism, since there is now no ready alternative available for reasonable discourse. So is the system outmoded? Well, many thoughtful citizens of America think of capitalism as a quaint and vanishing vestige of our Yankee industrial beginnings. And with burgeoning population, urbanization, industrialization, they argue capitalism disappears. They're not quite ready to embrace socialism, but they hardly approve government planning and intervention in the economy. And John Kenneth Galbraith, articulate spokesman for the liberal establishment, calls for the open acclaim of a new socialism, which he believes to be both imminent and necessary. This new socialism allows of no acceptable alternatives. It cannot be escaped except by the price of grave discomfort, considerable social disorder, and on occasion lethal damage to health and well-being. This new socialism is not ideological, it is compelled by circumstance. Now, at first blush, the Marxian assumption of economic determination is quite plausible, but I do not believe that it can stand up to the scrutiny of experience. Now, my study of history leads me to assume, with many of my thoughtful colleagues, that free people can, within certain limits, choose their own systems of political economy. And this is precisely what happened in West Germany at the time of Ludwig Erhard. The Germans chose capitalism rather than the socialism recommended by many Americans, British, and continental economists and politicians. It is my opinion that Americans can and should call for a renewal of capitalism rather than a new socialism. Capitalism has been neither understood nor sympathetically considered by most contemporary Americans. Capitalism is a radical and appealing system of political economy which needs a new and favorable review. The new socialism has never been tried. The old socialism is not very inviting. Consider Russia, China, Cuba, Chile, and now Great Britain. Capitalism has been tried with the most amazing success. In fact, it is the most amazing success in all of history. So, what is the nature of a political and economic system which has made the poor people of America more prosperous than the rich of most countries operating under state control? Now, here are my paragraphs in praise of capitalism. They're somewhat lyrical, but grounded in fact and open to review. Number one is the inevitable reward. Capitalism offers an inevitable reward. Capitalism is the one system of political economy which works, has worked, and given a chance will continue to work. The alternative system is called socialism, and socialism is seductive. It is a very seductive theory, but it tends toward tyranny and serfdom when it's put into practice. Now, capitalism was not born with the Wealth of Nations, nor will it die with Das Kapital. It is as old as history, and as new as a paper route for a small boy. Capitalism is a point of view, and it's a way of life. And the principles of capitalism apply whether or not they are understood, approved, or even cherished. Capitalism is no relic of colonial America. It has the genius of freedom to change with the times and to meet the challenges of big industries, big unions, and big government if it can be free to invest itself and to keep itself from the restraints of interest group intervention, which eventuates in needless government expansion and spending. If you just let the market work, and the ambition of each individual will serve the common good of society. Capitalism is an economic system which believes with Locke and Jefferson that life, liberty, and property are among the inalienable rights of man. Capitalism denies the benign dichotomy between property values and human values. Property values are human values. Imagine the disjunction when it is applied to a person with mechanical limb or a cardiac pacemaker. The workman with his tools and the farmer with his land are almost as dramatic an exemplification of the identity between a person and his property. Capitalism is belief in man, an assumption that prosperity and happiness are best achieved when each person lives by his own will and his own intelligence. Every person is a responsible citizen. Now, associated with that comes limited government. Capitalism recognizes the potential tyranny of any government. The government is made for man, not man for the government. Therefore, government should be limited in size and limited in its function, lest free individuals lose their identity, become wards of the state. Frederick Bastiat has called the state a great fiction wherein everybody tries to live at the expense of everybody else. Think about that now for a minute. From each according to his ability and to each according to his need, put into operation. It's where everybody is trying to live off of everybody else's labor without putting in any labor of his own. The welfare recipient wants to collect, wants to live as well as Donald Trump. He doesn't want to work like Donald Trump. He doesn't want to produce like Donald Trump, but he wants to live like Donald Trump at Donald Trump's expense. Now, the fallacy with that is, as I explained earlier, I said, you know, I used to run a company with 30 employees. And I stopped doing that. And I stopped doing that because when the government came in and took more and more, in fact, when the government took twice as much as I received, I just woke up one morning and said, I'm not going to do that. It's just that simple. When government that does nothing to produce, create, comes in and takes twice as much as the producer and the creator, it sends a signal to me that I'm in the wrong business. So I got out. I got out of the government-regulated capital business, and I went into something else. I'm in free enterprise. I'm in the underground economy. I'm in the free marketplace. Now, that will produce a better living, a better standard of living for you, and it's available anywhere. You can do it in China. You can do it in Russia, Brazil, anywhere. Now, the free marketplace, when it is expanded to include all the citizens of a nation, then all the citizens in the nation will prosper to a higher extent than in a nation like Russia or China, where they, you know, expose the majority of people to socialism. Now, look at the miracle of China over the last 20 or 25 years. When they got off their communist ideology and they started to accept free marketplace incentives, the Chinese economy has just mushroomed. The Chinese are growing 8-10% a year. Even in the midst of this depression, they're growing by 6%. In depression, they're growing 6%. That's the free marketplace. As long as the Chinese adopt free market enterprise incentives in their marketplace, their economy is going to grow. It's going to flourish. Those people are going to become more prosperous. That's all. It's always worked that way in the past. And the more government intrusion that you put into the marketplace, then the poorer you're going to live. And that's what we're experiencing in America. We practiced free enterprise and became free and great, and then we put in government, big government controls, and now we're beginning to live poorer and poorer. And that's just the way it works. Now, if you want to participate in the big government program, get after it. If you want to participate in the limited government program, then get out of government. That can be done, you know, in most places at most any time. So that's what we advocate here in our business school. You know, get off of General Motors and get into something that's engaged in free enterprise. Start looking to the free enterprise model. Take a look at, let's re-examine the Ten Commandment model in place of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto model. Now, here in America, between 1787 and 1933, we practiced the Ten Commandment model, became the wealthiest, most powerful, prosperous military, economic, and political power in the world. And then we adopted communism in 1933, and between 1933 and 2009, we have become the world's greatest debtor nation. We're no longer the political power. We're no longer the economic power that we were. We are still the world's number one military power. But that will diminish over time and it will collapse, just like the Roman Empire's military power deteriorated over time and it collapsed. It's the way of empires and civilizations and city-states. It isn't that way because I say it that way. It's that way because that's the way life is. Now, capitalism denies the naive and mystic faith in the state to control wages and prices. A fair price is the amount agreed upon by the buyer and seller. Competition in a free market is far more trustworthy than the government administrator. The government is a worthy defense against force and fraud, but the market is much better at protecting against monopoly. It's much better against protecting against inflation, soaring prices, depressed wages, and the problems of scarcity. Capitalism works to the advantage of the consumer and the worker alike. Capitalism recognizes the potential tyranny of any government. And the government is made for man, not man for the government. Capitalism believes that every person deserves an opportunity. All men are created equal in terms of opportunity. But people are not equal, nor should they be. How dull a world in which nobody could outrun anybody else. Competition is good. It's a good thing no matter how much people try to avoid it. Equality and liberty are contradictory. Capitalism chooses liberty. Think about that. Equality. Under this guise of equality. Well, we've got to make everybody equal. So you come along with the guy who's got 95 on his score, and you take 20 points off and give it to the guy that's got 55. It doesn't benefit either side. The guy that scores 55 is not motivated to work harder to produce a higher score, and the guy that scored 95 is not encouraged to score higher. He's encouraged to mediocrity. That's what the bottom line is, mediocrity. Hey, we're out of time again here, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.